All right, 42 past the hour. Let's jump in with Brian Christopherson of Husker 24/7. BC, good seeing you on Saturday. You've got a notebook full of things from spring practice that it'll be a while before you sift through all of it. When you walked out of the stadium on Saturday, what was the one key takeaway for you of what you saw that culminated 15 practices?
I guess the idea that the wide receiver talk I kind of buy into. I'm bullish on that group, and I like seeing, you know, Omar Manning trot out there with the first group and run past the guy, even though he dropped it. I think you saw that he was had some chemistry at least with the quarterback, and I think you saw that Toure had that, and Oliver Martin kind of lived up to his part for what we've talked about all spring, that he was really strong over there. So the top three especially looked good, but then I think you saw the bit parts too. You know, your Will Nixon types who had five catches, had that pretty nifty snag along the sideline. I have a hard time believing he's not going to find his way onto the field some way, somehow. And then you consider, you know, I know Xavier Betts was sort of missing from the equation, but he's a guy that, you know, has a lot of potential, and Alante Brown was out, but was having a good early spring. I just think they've got enough possible solutions there that they should take a step. So that is a positive. And I guess I was encouraged by the running backs, too. I thought they had a pretty good day after sort of a disjointed spring where, you know, like Savion Morrison wasn't even available for the last 2 weeks. And I think at least he showed a little bit of what he could do. And Dave Irvin, I think, is sort of the flavor of the offseason right now, and for good reason. I think he's right in the mix as the top guy. And Marquise Steph, even though he has the experience, I mean, he's going to have to come out with his foot on the pedal, because there's a couple guys that have an advantage on him right now, maybe.
You know how we don't always go all in on discussion about, hey, the wide receiver room, let's give it some praise. We say, well, why? Because if you look at who I believe, you know, the top four wide receivers, Toure, Martin, Manning, and Xavier Betts. Betts and Martin are the only two guys of that four that have caught passes, and they've only caught 17 in their career. Most cases we would go, yeah, I'm not so sure. What do you think, or who do you think, changes the opinion of, hey, that wide receiver room, much improved, going to be okay?
Well, it's probably Toure and Manning, because, I mean, when he first got here, everybody remembers Scott Frosted. I haven't coached a guy that looks quite like him at wide receiver. And, you know, he had coached some pretty good guys at Oregon and even UCF, so that was quite a statement. But when you actually see Omar out there moving on the field with his 6'5", or whatever the size is, the 225 pounds that he carries, it's impressive. I mean, he does draw your eye in. And so I think just the idea that, okay, he's actually out there. He's been out there this spring, and he's put some good practices together in front of people. I mean, it's okay to be encouraged around here sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a bright spot after it was sort of a cloudy thing last year. And then Toure, I understand people feel a little bit from the past, because there's been some, you know, like Tonavainoa didn't quite work out like was hoped, and Mike Williams and Jerron Woodyard never really took off as JUCO transfers. But I think Toure just has a different resume than those guys. I mean, you're talking about a guy who actually had like 1,500 yards receiving, albeit in an FCS season. Still really impressive. And I think you saw, I mean, he's a legit 6'3 guy who can cause some matchup issues in the slot. When you combine that with Austin Allen as a guy who I think can be a nice security blanket for Adrian Martinez, that seems good coming out of spring. So I think it's Toure and Manning that sort of really bolster the optimism.
Toure is, you know, we knew what we were getting. To watch him at his craft, He almost is like a professional wide receiver. He's a little bit older, but you can tell that the way he runs routes, he catches the ball, he's got a lot of experience. I just think the way that he carries himself has an impact on that wide receiver room. And then we get to his impact on the field. You kind of used it, and I'm starting to use it more. As you look at Adrian's career, he needs that security blanket. Stanley Morgan was Adrian Martinez's best friend. Stanley was ultimately, he was really, really talented. But he was somebody that Adrian could connect with and trust almost immediately. I'm starting to get that sense with Torre. That's his safety blanket, or his security blanket, his safety valve, that if things break down, you've got a guy that is talented like Torre that'll be open and has got a huge catch radius that he'll take care of you if something is off the mark.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Obviously, I get, from my last sentence, I get soaked up just talking about it. I mean, it's an emotional thing. Talk about a quarterback who's just having that security blanket. But yeah, I mean, Stanley Morgan, Adrian's freshman year, was a guy where Adrian could trust that he could put up a 50-50 ball and think it's maybe more than 50-50, and it's definitely going to be my guy or nobody at all is going to come down with this. And that's the way Stanley it was. And when you watch college football on Saturdays, the great teams, yes, they're well-oiled and what they do, but they also have these plays and games where it's third down and seven, and one of your playmakers has an ability to just go win a football in the air and take it away from somebody. And, I mean, Alabama, as good as they are, they have those type of guys where they're in the jam. Okay, I'm gonna, that guy goes up and gets it, you know, and it gets a 25-yard play. The drive keeps going. They score, and they have momentum. And so that is, has such value. And Toure's size at 6'3", I just think is – I just like him in the slot. When he first said that at the beginning of the spring, I didn't know quite what to make of it. And now as I've watched it unfold with the parts around it, it makes a lot of sense to me.
You – there's the whole – everything's got to come together. And you have the parts. And, you know, Scott alluded to this last night. I believe this is his most complete team. He doesn't have any glaring holes. They've recruited themselves into some options, especially – on offense with depth at wide receiver and running back, but there is kind of the great unknown because a lot of those guys have yet to play a football game at Nebraska. But for those guys to succeed, they need some help from the play calling. And we didn't get to hear from Matt Lubick maybe one time during the spring, and they're going to share play calling duties again. Have you been able to figure out what the play calling scenario will be like this upcoming fall between those two? In the second year of them being together at Nebraska?
I'm not completely sure, but I do think there's just a trust factor there where Scott feels like Lubick has sort of a similar brain to him through all their experience together. And so that allows Scott to take more time with his team. Like in the Rutgers game when they were sloppy and having breakdowns, he was able to go, you know, chew out his own line with some penalties, and they kind of got their act together. And there is something to be said for the coach having that free rein to trust other people and take on some of the sideline responsibilities when some things maybe aren't going as they should and take care of some discipline stuff. So I think that's kind of an advantage to it. Maybe it helps Scott with the special teams take a deeper look at that too on game days. I don't know. But I think Lubick will have a huge say in it on game days. And I think he was starting to at the end of last year. And even kind of talked about it in December, and I was surprised it didn't really take off as much as I thought. He sort of spoke about how they were really sharing those duties, and then after the season, it kind of picked up steam. But I expect them to carry over from what they were doing, basically.
There's the other part of the discussion about this offense and what we've been talking about at running back is there's a lot of intrigue there. There's some guys that they tease you a little bit that – I think Gabe Irvin impressed a lot of people, by the way, that he took advantage of his opportunity. He's coming in thinking, hey, I'm going to have to share some carries in the fall or in the spring to put a foot forward. I'm going to have a transfer from USC. Step goes down with an injury. The door opens, and Irvin took advantage of those opportunities so much that he's going to be one of the first guys to carry the football 16 weeks from tomorrow. But Scott said something last night, and I think about the running backs that have been here. We keep going back to the first year, and if we're using Adrian, he got it. He got the great introduction to college football because he had a guy named Divine Azigbo behind him and a guy like Stanley Morgan to throw the football to. So those were guys that were more experienced that could help him out. But since then, Scott said we haven't found a running back that we can count on play in and play out. That includes a guy like Dedrick Mills who got a plethora of carries, but kind of was in and out of situations where you thought he should be on the field and in key parts. What has to happen for this deep running back room, but unknown running back room, for somebody to step up and convince the head coach and his play caller that they can be counted on first, second, and even third down to be out there?
Yeah, I mean, somebody's going to have – well, they're going to have to know everything where, you know, they know the playbook where you can trust them on passing downs, whatever the situation may be, and you know they're going to do their job. But also they're going to need to have durability. And, you know, that's been, I guess, the knock on some of these guys. Some of it's hard to judge because there was the COVID season last year, and, like, you know, Sevion Morrison got COVID. And, I mean, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
Marvin Scott had a false positive. It was such a weird year. And so I do think we have to take that into account with last season, with some of those guys who were here last year. They were dealing with uncharted waters. And, yeah, it was disappointing that some weren't out there at the beginning of the spring. But I think you started to see at the end, you know, like Morrison was picking up some steam. You know, Marvin Scott's been a guy who's mostly been available throughout his career. So I think the durability piece is a big part to the answer to your question. And then it's going to be someone just showing that. I think right now most of us probably left last Saturday thinking, like, yeah, this got like four or five solid guys, you know. But can you get from that place where you have four or five solid guys where you have one or two who are A-grade running backs, you know, like guys who can take over a game? And that's the big question that someone's got to answer. And, you know, Amir Abdullah was that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Amir Abdullah, like, there's a game in my mind where I think of a running back taking over a game. It's Miami 2014. Amir Abdullah, when you go back and watch that game, it's just a running back who was the best player on the field. And, they, you know, he made runs that were 1 or 2 yard runs into 5 or 6 yard runs. And when Greg Austin comes out at the beginning of the spring and he talks about how we've got to get ahead of the chains, you know, last year we didn't do that on first down as much as we wanted to. Yes, that's a challenge to the O-line. It's also a challenge to those running backs. On, there's going to be some plays where it isn't just blocked exactly as you threw it up on the grease board. And a guy's got to have that knack for, you know, making the most out of it, for squeezing 4 yards out of a play that maybe some backs only get 0 or 1 yard. And so that to me, find me that guy. Mm-hmm. The guy who gets those 2 or 3 extra yards on a play where it looks kind of dead in the water, I think that's the guy that's needed as much as home run hitter or anything else we talk about.
And it may also just boil down to, if you want to get ahead in the running back room, learn the playbook. You know, when you're supposed to go to the right hole, read the right hole. If it's inside or outside, do the right thing. Just learning the playbook. And I say that because whenever there's the Ramir Johnson, and then it's but he's got to learn the playbook. He's got to know what he's doing out there. If you want to get ahead, learn the playbook, have it down. You're talented enough. You're on scholarship. Then once you get the playbook down, you can show off your ability and maybe, you know, work your way up in the circle of the tree of trust. I also, going back to your comment about Amir, it may be, BC, a long time before we see another running back in Nebraska carry the ball 35 times in a game.
Yeah, that's probably true. But to that point, that's what I'm talking about, where, yes, it's okay. You want 3 or 4 solid guys, but and that's what Scott Frost, I think, was getting at a little bit last night. You still need that guy who sort of is like, I'm a little bit ahead of the rest of y'all, and I'm going to, you know, you give me the ball 25 times, and there's going to be certain games where it splits pretty evenly, but there are going to be nights when it's my game, and I'm going to take it over, and I'm going to get, you know, 26 carries, and the next guy's going to get 4 carries.
Yeah, and or you have a guy like Amir kind of was throughout his career, but especially in that game that was so physical, because he was about 6.5 yards per carry, is I don't need a guy that his majority of his yards are a 70-yard touchdown run. I think Amir's longest run that night may have been 20, 25 yards, but he got a lot of those 5, 6, 7-yard carries that just kept piling up and keeping the chains moving. And maybe that guy is on the roster currently that doesn't need to be somebody that hits their head on the goalpost the first time they carry the ball, but they get 2, and then they get 8, and then they get 4, and then they get 12, kind of along those lines where Amir could hit his head on the goalpost, but he was consistent at when you needed yardage, he got yardage for you.
And I don't know if it's going to translate this way or not. I don't want to get too far ahead with Gabe Irvin, but the thing I did like about him as a recruit when I watched him, he wasn't one of those guys who just had highlight tape where it was him going east and west and reversing his field and making these 70-yard runs. It was, and that's cool. Those are the fun highlights to watch. But when you watch him, sometimes you're like, that really going to work against Wisconsin? You know, a guy who's dancing around and stuff like that, he's going to end up for the two-yard loss. When you watch Gabe Irvin, he was very efficient in his runs, and sometimes they weren't flashy, but he was just a guy who got forward. Like again, I don't want to go too far with him, but I like that about him coming in, and there must be some of that is shown in the spring for him to get the reviews he has from coaches.
You know how spring works. Sometimes it's geared a little bit. We get to see that the offense has more of an impact. And, you know, in the spring game, it can be set up for the offense. But even though the number one defense at times had its say on Saturday, how do you think the spring went for the defense, which coming in had a distinct advantage because of the depth and the amount of snaps that those guys have played? But what, reading between the lines, and we didn't get to hear from Eric Chenander after Saturday, how do you think the defense held up during the spring?
I think they're confident, you know, and it sounds like there was pretty good back and forth, but, you know, the defense, I think, is still a group where the thing you feel good about with Nebraska football is that you're taking that group to Illinois for the first game.
True.
And they should have some confidence. And what is portable is a run game and a good defense. And so at least we know that they have the part where we feel like Nebraska can play on that side of the ball. They're coming out with an expectation that they are going to stop people. Cam Taylor Britt, you can tell, is just like all in on this season and giving everything he can to Husker football. And, you know, what I liked about it was how deep they were on Saturday. You got to see guys in the game who are second or third team guys, even on the D-line, who don't have to necessarily play this year, but they look sturdy. You know, they look like guys who can be contributors in a year or so. And so Eric Chenander's done a good job really stockpiling that room, I think. And, you know, now you need your ballers to make some plays and get some turnovers. That's going to be the biggest thing to me is they've got to be that group that's not just solid, but they're good on third down the football way and take it away more than they have in the past.
Will Honus, any other time Will Honus goes down, a guy that's played a lot of football, and I mean, he's in his sixth year of college football, his third major knee injury. You feel for him, especially when you hear the backstory of he was out for part of spring, came back at the end, just wanted some reps and got hurt, and now he's done for a while. But with that, and you think, ah, man, there was a guy that was kind of starting to fit into this scheme that he wasn't so comfortable with when he began. How much does it soothed it a little bit that Chris Kolarvik has fit in pretty well, and he was here on campus to go through spring, and he showed you that he can make the transition from Northern Iowa to playing at Nebraska alongside or with two guys that I think are going to have monster years in Henrich and Reimer.
Yeah, I mean, it really stinks for Will because the guy comes back for this and was playing really good football last year too. So I feel terrible for him. And, you know, what does that do to his future after this, too? That stuff is where football can be a cruel game sometimes. The part you're talking about is also true. It's at a position group where, you know, if there is a silver lining, there was depth there. And Henrich and Reimer are guys I know this coaching staff is really excited about. And I'm on the Reimer train, there's no doubt about it, and I've kind of been on the Chris Kolarvik train, too. I've thought that I didn't know if he was going to necessarily win a starting role with as deep as it is, but I figured that's a guy who can give him a pretty strong rotation at middle backer. And there's other guys that I think that Garrett Rude likes, and Garrett Snodgrass, and, you know, Malga Clement and stuff like that. So it's not that they don't have some even fourth, fifth guys there. So I think they can hold up. But, you know, now it gets to that point where you lost Sidone, you lost Honus. There's usually like one sad news deadline in August, too, during camp, and you just hope it is really limited on that front, you know. And obviously there's not going to be as much contact maybe this year because of the new rules. But as we've seen, that doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. A lot of these injuries nowadays happen, you know, non-contact anyway. Guy just plants wrong and there's a season, and that's where it's scary as a coach. You can try to do everything you can to avoid the collisions and all this stuff, and maybe you take some of the concussion stuff out of play, but you still don't take out of the equation those just the guy lands wrong on his foot and then he's he's done. I mean, that's where it's really hard.
Yeah, absolutely. BC, I appreciate it. Enjoy Mother's Day with Mom this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to see Mom. Thanks a lot for having me. And I was one of the four people who knew the John Gordon of the Minnesota Twins that you're talking about. So,
hey, yes. Yes.
Touch them all. That was his home run call. Touch them all, Kirby Puckett.
That is great. BC, thanks.
Yep.
That's Brian Christopherson from Husker 24/7. Diehard Twins fan. A little bit rough for the Twins right now because they have a bullpen that is and they can't win a game that's decided in not nine innings. Game in seven innings or in extra innings as they lost to the Rangers yesterday. But they have the Tigers. That might be the best thing that's happening to the Twins there at Comerica Park. Hey, Barrett Rudd. So I think Barrett Rudd's still learning the recruiting game. And, you know, he's in-state guy. But I think that's still a process for Barrett to get down the recruiting part of it. But you cannot you cannot complain about the kind of spring that he had. You look at his group of linebackers, and the three that we mentioned get the headlines. But Kapai, who just needs physically to develop, guys like Grant Taggy, who is a walk-on from Westside, he has gotten his group. They all were pretty impressive this spring. He coached them up where they've made progress, where you walk into August and you are starting to feel pretty good about the inside linebacker room. Now, you would like to have another linebacker with a little bit more experience, but I think Barrett had a good spring in terms of developing his room. And he's still young as a head coach. All right, 12:04, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Dirk Chatelain joins us at 1. And I got a big question. There's a lot of things I don't understand in life. I don't understand something that happened yesterday in Miami that I'm going to need some help from. Okay, it kind of reminded me of Jim Rice in 1986. They're playing at Yankee Stadium, and a Yankee fan takes his hat. And the next thing you know, Jim Rice is in the stands fighting a fan. Well, it wasn't fighting fans. It was two guys fighting each other yesterday. And I can't figure out which is which. We'll do that coming up next.